Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We get together here once a week in the Community Radio studios of KHOI, downtown Ames, in the beautiful Pantorium building on Douglas Avenue. We are here. This is Community Radio. And we talk about food, farming, advice, recipes, and opinions. Yes, we do.
Oh, boy.
We do. Today, there's a hint of fall in the air. We don't like to admit it, but
I know,
it's coming.
I'm looking at my, you know, Lana has given me Tithonia seeds the plants.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of years. Now, Tithonia is a Mexican sunflower. I highly recommend them. They kind of start late, but by this time of year, they're like 6, 8, 10 feet tall. But they don't. You don't just get one bloom out of them. They kind of sprout these lovely little, 2.5-inch blossoms. Now, we've been doing orange for a lot of years. And they are butterfly attractants and hummingbird attractants. And this year, Lana came up with a sort of a yellowish one. So mm-hmm. I've got the yellow ones and the orange ones and so many butterflies. I highly recommend everybody doing Tithonia because it just kind of goes on and on and on.
Perfect color for fall.
Maybe we'll get that, you know, last year we mm-hmm. had that beautiful long fall with a very late frost date. So,
yep.
We'll see.
Butterflies must be doing their migrating or they're just all over things in the garden.
Well, I'm a little
sucking things
butterfly
up.
Ignorant. I mean, I do have the black and gold, but that's not a monarch. It's something smaller. Or is that a monarch. Well, I got something orange and black and a lot of them, and they're just darling.
Good.
That's all I can tell you.
I've noticed smaller ones that are more spotty orange and black, and they've got white spots on them, and they've come in quantities.
Sounds like what I have.
Yeah.
Okay,
well,
so we don't know what they are.
Well, no, I was going to look it up. I didn't get around to it. Probably somebody out there in the listening audience knows what those lovely things are. They are just covered on my small field that I've put a cover crop on.
And even I have a lot in town backyard.
Yeah. There's some late sunflowers coming up there, and they're just covered with those things. And there's some buckwheat coming up, and there's some, there's field peas too, but they're
not flowering. And my garlic chives are blooming like crazy, and they're covered in bees and butterflies.
Yes. Somebody asked me if bees do like the garlic chive
blossoms. Yeah.
And garlic chive blossoms are quite garlicky. Does that
and
make
they're
garlic?
Yummy.
Does that make garlic honey? Oh, I don't know.
Huh? Well, I'm picking some and putting them in salads. They're, you know, if you just trim the little white blossoms off and sprinkle them over a salad, it's quite charming.
Yes. Pretty flowers, garlic chives this time of year. Raspberries are coming in. The late bearing raspberries are coming in. And you think we'd get through summer without it. This has been an amazingly dry and bug-free year as far as mosquitoes are concerned. But this week, I've noticed a few mosquitoes descending on me.
Oh, I got them. You know, we had that little rain spell. We got them then, and I turned on my outdoor bug zapper. Yep. For whatever that's worth.
So we do have some. I kind of worried, you know, what if those are mosquitoes, what are the bats eat? So,
we need mosquitoes. Yeah. They're part of the ecosystem.
Yeah. They are here. So there it is. Oh, and I want to mention that after a long dry spell on my farm because we had my chicken flock was wiped out. So I've been starting. I started with chicks last spring. I'm finally getting some pullet eggs.
I've been saving cartons for you. I forgot to bring them. Oh, dear.
Yeah, okay. I do take empty cartons into the chicken house and wave them at the chickens to kind of let them know.
Get the idea.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Okay, girls. Come on.
And there, you know, when you think about it, the effort and the mystery and the glory that goes into making an egg out of a chicken.
Yes, nature's most perfect food.
It is. And pullet eggs, you go and pull it means
little
guys. And pullet eggs really are kind of half size.
They're just darling.
Usually they have a complete yolk. Usually they have a complete white, but not always. As they get started, they have to practice a little bit here.
Well, and sometimes you'll get double yolks because they really don't know what they're doing, and that is very fun.
So we're enjoying pullet eggs right now, but looking forward to the flock perking up and going into the winter with full-size eggs. Here we go. And yes, there they are. That's good. Today, we're going to talk about apples and things.
Oh, it is apple season. Hallelujah. And we have good apples in Iowa.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. You have an apple book that we have shared before. Talk about this lovely apple book.
We talked about this book last year, which they have at the library. It's called Apples of Uncommon Character by Rowan, R-O-W-A-N, Jacobson. It kind of goes through different varieties, 123 heirlooms, modern classics, and little-known wonders. Now, this guy's a New Englander, so our apples are, for the most part, different. But we do have quite a few really good apple growers around here. Like the Berry Patch has multiple varieties, and that's a you pick. That's south of Nevada. And then
there's Deals Orchard.
Deals,
They have a lot of varieties.
They had, I think, maybe six varieties last week. And, of course, he lets you taste them all. So that's a really good way to train your palate because everybody likes different things. So one of the things that they were saying in this apple book, and I agree with the way of breaking this down, we get different apples. There's the early apples, which are called summer apples. We're pretty much through those already. And then as the season goes on, we get different kinds of apples. He also breaks it down into what he calls dessert apples, which is the old-fashioned way of talking about any really good eating apple, because it used to be, apples were one of the fruits that in northern climes you could store, you could keep. It was a long season, and it was a dessert was, before the total importation of sugarcane, we had maple syrup, molasses, apples, and honey, basically. Mm-hmm. And apples were a dessert. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like, I can remember as a kid, even my mother used to put an orange in the bottom of my sock because an orange was so precious that getting an orange at Christmas was a big deal for children. So having an apple for dessert, that was dessert. So the dessert apples are any of the apples that you just pick up and eat or slice them. Obviously, the ones that don't have really, really dense skins, some people like tartar, more sweet, whatever, those are called dessert apples. Then, bakers and saucers. Mm. Those are the kinds, usually a little bit more tart, but it has to do with more how they break down. Like for example, what's your favorite pie apple? That would be a baker.
Oh, Northern Spy.
Ah. Mm-hmm. There's the classic pippin, which I almost eat, no matter what I'm making in a pie, I try to put some pippins in because they really, they hold their shape. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, for a pie and a baker, you don't want one that's going to, just turn into mush.
Right. I like pies that have recognizable apples in them.
Yeah, because the ones that turn into mush, those are the saucers.
That's good. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Takes all kinds, as they
say.
Yes, it does. So you got the bakers and the saucers. Then you got the keepers. Now, we probably don't have any keepers yet. Mm. They're usually late-season apples. Of course, the problem with the keepers is we don't have too many anymore because they've devised all of these.
Now we have refrigeration.
and more than refrigeration, it's a whole way of, controlling the ethylene gas and keepers. I was going to read you this. Today, technological innovation, this is from the Apple book, technological innovation has reduced keepers to historical footnotes. Beginning in the 1960s, apple growers learned that by storing apples in controlled atmosphere warehouses, they could arrest the breakdown process. Apples require oxygen to ripen and to overripen. In controlled atmosphere storage, apples are kept in rooms filled with nitrogen gas at temperatures just above freezing and humidity levels around 90%. With virtually no oxygen, they will stay in a state of suspended animation for up to a year and still be marketable. Then he says, be warned, however, that, as in the picture of Dorian Gray, their souls are still aging, despite appearances to the contrary. Once released from the controlled atmosphere, they tend to go downhill fast, and they can even sabotage you in recipes. So that's where the keepers come in, which people don't use too much anymore because they, you know, they have the mechanical. So he lists, like I've had an Arkansas Black. They talked about how we used to just store them in a cool, dark place. Mm-hmm. And some of them actually improve. Like when you first pick an Arkansas Black, for example, they're not really good eating. But after they've kind of rested mm-hmm. off the tree and they start to develop a flavor, they do improve up to a point. And in the days before controlled atmosphere techniques, people used to have different varieties of trees so that they could stagger which apple they would have. And they were able to go all the way through the winter until, like, the strawberries came with mm-hmm. an apple. And can you imagine not having trucked in produce from anywhere and all winter long you have nothing but canned this and, you know, dried that or sauerkraut this. And yet you can still have a fresh apple.
Mm-hmm. And even if they get a little wrinkly, they could still cook into a pie.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
They can.
So apples were carrots and a few other mm-hmm. things that, mm-hmm. that go for a long time. So we had the storage apples, some of which have fabulous flavors that, as they say in the book, we are losing some of the varieties. Then you also have cider apples. Okay, if you're ever wandering around and you see an apple tree out on your hike and you pick an apple and it tastes horrible, there are two options. Either it's woefully underripe or it is a cider apple. Well, it could be a crab apple, but they're usually identified because they're small. Cider apples are bred because they have certain qualities that ferment well. You know, and they're usually really bitter and not very nice tasting, and those often make the best cider.
Right, and cider apple, in the way of making cider, it's not usually just one kind of apple. People know how to blend their apples.
Oh, yeah, just like making wine. Yeah, cider can be very exciting and complex. However, I think it's a bit easier than making wine. It's pretty much just straight fermentation. Mm-hmm. It ferments on its own. He highly recommends just juicing your own apples of specific varieties, mm-hmm. corking it up and letting it sit for a few months.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Blow the top off of it, and then you know it's ready to drink. So we are getting some good ciders coming back to Iowa. That is encouraging. He also does mention the Red Delicious.
Oh, the Red Delicious.
Okay. Which I have to read what he says because it's very funny. Today, the Red Delicious is a zombie apple. Although still ubiquitous in the supermarket, the life left it long ago. It has a zombie taste and a zombie future. It may still be America's number one apple with 40% of the market, but no one has planted Red Delicious in years. In two decades, it will be as forgotten as winesap is today and far less mourned. Now, we do find winesaps, and I actually really like winesaps, but the Red Delicious has become the joke of, you know, kind of overbreeding. And it is an Iowa breeding program.
We find them in people are think they're being nice to you by giving you a fruit basket, you know. And they might as well give you a waxed fruit apple because in my experience,
they don't taste good.
You know, although
they're very pretty, but they don't
taste
good.
If they are ripened on the tree, they're okay. But they probably go through that controlled ripening process. Anyway, I have seldom had a Red Delicious that I thought was really delicious. But there's so many other apples.
Fortunately.
Yes.
unfortunately. So even though it does come from Peru, Iowa, in 1881.
There you go.
It is the ubiquitous concept of apple.
Yeah.
So it's a symbol.
Mm-hmm. And they're good for still lifes. Yeah, they really are.
Yeah, there's the graphic artist coming at us. All right, yeah. Lana.
Right.
So it's apple season. Do enjoy. And what have you been making with apples, Lana?
Well, I always make a lot of applesauce and that sort of thing because I put things in the freezer. But
what kind of apple trees do you have out at your house?
Oh, not many. I have a Northern Spy, which I said that they're not quite ready yet.
Oh, okay.
And we have one called an Empire.
Oh, I love Empires.
Yeah, they're, and boy, it is just loaded this time of year.
Oh,
and
I might have to come out and help
and
you
they're
pick
just
them.
About ready. And then we have lots and lots and lots of crab apples, which have come and gone, but I have grabbed many
crab
apples.
Yeah, you did a whole crab apple thing of what you sauced it, made jams. It's great for jelly, isn't it?
Oh, I love crab apple jelly. So that's an apple. I have those three, but I like to taste all different kinds. If I'm going to be cooking an apple, I do like an apple pie, and we've talked about what's the proper way to make an apple pie crust. Do you use Crisco? Do you use butter? Do you use lard? And apple pies are lovely, but I have learned there's something called an apple galette, or you could call it a rustic apple pie.
Yes, I've always heard it called a rustic tart.
Rustic tart or a country apple pie. Don't need to put it in a pie pan. You kind of treat the dough like a pizza, and you wrap it on a flat
You just roll out a flat round, and then put the apples on, or the whatever. You can make all kinds of flavors. And you can also make little individual ones, too.
Yeah, and the idea is not to close up the fruit. You just make kind of edges.
Fold the edges up a little enough to hold the juices in.
Maybe it's a thumb width, or 2 inches or an inch and a half around the edge. You kind of poke at it a little bit and kind of create your own little crust there. And I like doing that. I think it for one thing, it ends up a nice thing to share around a table because apple pies are always kind of, we're into pie charts here, and people are so careful about cutting their slice. This kind of thing, a galette, you don't feel bad about just going back and taking a forkful.
Here's what the book says. Galettes are rustic fruit tarts that are supposed to look charmingly unpolished. And he says, which plays well to my kitchen strengths. To hold together, they need to have more strength than a pie crust, hence the egg and the dough.
Yes, I was going to mention that. I usually add an egg to my pie crust in general. But
I often do, and a tiny bit of sugar.
Yeah,
so for a galette, basically take your favorite pie dough recipe and make it big enough that adding an egg isn't going to screw up the moisture.
Mm-hmm.
And I put a little extra sugar in.
Sugar's good. Yeah. And because you need to handle it a little bit to go around the edges.
And you don't want it to, fall apart the second you touch it.
No, this is rustic.
Because you have to be able to, lift it with a spatula, kind of, and, So what do you put in yours, Lana?
Well, I just like apples. And I found that if you're going to make a galette, it doesn't work with frozen. I never had it work with frozen fruit or thing because
it's too mushy. You can't have too much juice.
So I slice up apples I've drizzled it with a little olive oil. I've added a little rosemary or I've added a little basil. Actually, I got the first.
Oh, apples and herbs are great. Thyme a lot with my
apples.
Thyme
and apples would be good. A little salt and pepper is good. Pepper, you put pepper with things. My first hint into this sort of rustic country stuff galette thing was a recipe from Lynn Rosetta Casper, The Italian Country Table, and she doesn't call it a galette, but it ends up being a galette. She calls it a sweet rosemary pear pizza. Same idea. This wonderful, rich, sweet crust
That's how you can tell this is an older cookbook.
Yeah, because they just call it a pizza, but it isn't really a pizza because this has sliced up pears.
And it's probably not a yeasted dough
No, it's not. No, it's a pastry dough. It's a pastry dough, and it's rosemary, and rosemary and pears. Lots of rosemary on those pears, and it actually has a little cinnamon and pepper too, a little sugar, and that actually has a zest of orange in there too.
Mm-hmm.
That depending on, I suppose, how tart your pears are, but that's the first time I ran across this galette idea, and I looked up galette in my handy Food Lover's Guide dictionary, and galette means just kind of a round thing, a round cake, a round pancake, a round galette.
Strictly speaking, I think it's a French derivation, and in France, a galette is the same as a crepe, but in Brittany, a galette is a crepe made out of buckwheat.
Ah, see? Galette is a big term, and we could maybe talk about galettes another time, because we're talking about apples here. Apples, yes. You wanted to talk about baked apples.
Well, that's the easy, healthy, no pastry method.
As long as you've talked about sugar and butter and all that kind of
there's
stuff.
I'm. You know what I think I'm going to try? Because my neighbors, Ann and Lou, have a tree with small, they're just a small apple, maybe in the lady apple family or something like that. And so there was a recipe in here. I'm shuffling through trying to find it. Basically, they just took the whole apples, these little guys, and just put a little canola oil, a little sugar, and just baked them whole.
Huh.
And served them up like that. So I think I'm going to try it because I have the right apple for that.
Good.
Couldn't be simpler. This is kind of like that.
Do a little work, yes.
Yeah, and it kind of says if you're... Oh, here it is. Slow roasted baby apples. It says works with any small apple, but best with tart and tannic apples where the sugar offsets the edgy qualities. If you use ladies, which are very sweet, you'll need less sugar. Wickersons... which is another variety, with their intense contrast of sweet and sour. These are sour, so this will be closer to a Wickerson. So they take 40 small apple stems intact, a quarter cup of canola oil, a tablespoon of cinnamon, and 2 tablespoons of sugar. So you just preheat the oven to 300, and you kind of roll them around with all the ingredients together and roast them till they're done. They suggest... Here, you'll like this part. You can skip the sugar if you want, but it says to serve them in small bowls to your guests to accompany something called a Pomona sidecar, which is 2 parts apple brandy, 1 part Cointreau, 1 part lemon juice, shaken well with ice and screened into a cocktail glass that has been rubbed in lemon juice and dipped in sugar.
Well,
so this is a cocktail apple.
Well, yeah, it looks like a little bite is what it looks like. And the skins are shriveled and crusty and yummy looking.
Talk about easy. You don't have to peel. You don't have to core. You just pick and rinse.
And speaking of things with apples, here's the question here. With apple pie or an apple galette, would you like cheese with apples?
Oh, Lonnie and I have been talking about this because... This must be a very Midwestern thing. We certainly did it in Illinois. When I was a kid and somebody made apple pie, you got the choice. Did you want it served with ice cream, vanilla, of course, or cheddar cheese? And did you have the same thing, Lana?
Yes, yes. And, of course, as a kid, ice cream was the first choice. But I really like a nice, sharp cheddar cheese, especially if the pie or the galette is kind of warm and gushy.
Actually sometimes would melt the cheese onto the pie.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good. This is KHOI, and this is the Donalana Kitchen. We're going to have a tune here. This tune is a homegrown tune written by Rick Exner, and it's about apples.
Oh, Rick.
It's about apples and choices.
Is the green of the prairie hay, green of an apple orchard on a summer day. Stay in the season when it turns to slip away. Go south for the weekend, take a downstate holiday. There are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still a few fish in the sea. After the harvest, an orchard on a whim, down on the southern tier, far out on a limb. Up in the branches with the empty robin's nest, there was the apple that the harvest grew. But there are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still a few fish in the sea. Cortlands and the Macintosh, they ripen much too fast. The spies and the Baldwins are the keepers of contrast. You'll find it's worth waiting for the apple that will last. There are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still fish in the sea. So bitter and so cold. Upstate you'll need a sunny memory you can hold. One that grows sweeter while the rest are growing mold. One that stays with you when the green leaves turn to gold. There are still a few stars in the sky. There are still a few fruit on the tree. There are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still a few fish in the sea. There are still a few oceans of prairie flowers. There are still a few fish in the sea.
Welcome back. This is the Donna Lena Kitchen. We're talking about apples today, and that was a tune called The Apple Two-Step, about apples, about wise choices, about making changes and looking forward to apples that will last a long time relationship, by Rick Exner. Thank you, Rick, for a good apple tune. Donna, you've got some things about words here.
Oh, you know, stumbling around on the internet night, I found an article of, it says, 8 foreign words that English doesn't have.
Well, that's handy. We can learn new things.
Yeah. Now, of course, I'm going to really blunder through the pronunciation.
These are food words.
Yes.
Food terms.
I'll give you a taste of it.
She says.
Yeah. Here's a Danish word called natmad, which means night food. So that is traditional food served at the end of a party before you're sent home.
Uh-huh.
That's a good concept that we don't have. It said it's become traditional at wedding receptions at the end, that in late in the evening, for the bride and groom to send their guests off with a snack before they head home.
Good idea.
Okay, now here's a Norwegian word. Oh, boy, I'll never say this one right. Utepils?
Close enough.
Utepils. It's Norwegian for, guess what? Outside beer.
Outside beer.
It's a beer, a kind of any beer that you enjoy drinking outside in the sunshine.
Well, it's good to have. It's like Eskimos having many words for snow.
Absolutely.
Okay, there you go.
Right.
That's handy. That's handy.
Or we think of it, you know, we have wine words.
Yeah.
And we also have more and more summer beers, too.
Uh-huh.
So, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, now, here's another one. This is Finnish. Boy, these Scandinavians, they got a lot going on. This one's called, oh, boy, how's your...
Oh,
Kalanskarnet?
Kalanskarnet, yes. Oh, this one. Oh, come now.
Underwear drunkenness.
Underwear drunkenness. Drinking at home, alone, in your underwear. Well, we have a term for that now. Kalanskarnet.
So I guess the Finns know how to do this well. And it must be common enough that they have a special word for it. Now... Okay, here's a Spanish word, sobremesa. That is to linger at the table and continue your conversation long after a meal is finished. Now, we do that when we just don't have a word for it. I guess we just call it hanging out, right, or hanging on, or keep on going.
It's a food word, another food word.
Okay, here's a Hungarian word, medarlata. It means bird seen. When you take the food on a picnic but don't eat it all, says this is a little unusual. Is packing a picnic but not eating the food once you're there so common in Hungary they need a word for it?
Must be.
If this picture, and there's a picture of two women having a picnic together, they're obviously just not neglecting their wine. Maybe they take enough along to drink that they forget to eat.
Huh.
Okay, now... This is from South India. It's called defiled food. In Gili, it means something that has already been bitten into.
Whoa.
We have a lot of
that's handy.
Of that. okay. Here's my favorite one. This is a Georgian word from the country of Georgia. I should have called Gil for a pronunciation.
Let's just say it's got about 33 letters. It starts with an S.
Shimamichanawara or something like it means I accidentally ate the whole thing.
Oh!
I am guilty of that. That means continuing to eat even when you're full. Oh, dear. Now, here's a good... Oh, this is a German one. Kummerspeck. Okay, guess what that means? Grief bacon. It means weight gain through overeating after a failed romance.
Oh, grief bacon. Yes, I like it.
Respect, right? Okay, those are eight words that talk about food habits that we don't have in English.
We should try to.
Although we have the habits, we just don't have the language
for it.
We
should try to work that into future shows just to see if we remember. It's kind of like a word a day, a food word a day. Well, here we go. Well, actually, we have a news item. Tick-a-tick-tick-a-tick-a-tick.
Oh,
the
yes,
Danilina Kitchen
do.
Ticker Tape has brought up a new thing. Donna, there is some good news. We need good news every now and then.
Okay. There is, for the first time in 80 years, a new chocolate variety. It's pink and it's fruity. No, it is not white chocolate with raspberries added. The Calibo Company, which is a Swiss chocolatier, has just come up with something called Ruby Chocolate. The pictures look beautiful. It was first unveiled in September 5th, so it will be a little while before you see it in the market because Calibo does not, they only sell chocolate to companies that make chocolate.
Ah.
So it will be hard to lay your hands on it for a little bit.
So this is a new kind of plant or a new kind of
coffee
bean. Chocolate bean.
Okay. Calibo asserts that no berries berry flavor, or color are used to create the new confection. Instead, the all-natural chocolate gets its hue and unusual taste from the unique ruby bean. It belongs to the same species of cacao plants used to create traditional chocolate, but contains a unique mix of compounds. It's probably different flavonoids and things like that. While Calibo will not reveal the proprietary process used to extract the pink color and fruity taste, the company says it took their research team, along with experts from Jacobs University, that must be Swiss, I guess, 13 years to unlock the ruby bean's attributes.
Huh.
So we will start to see something that you think is a raspberry chocolate. It's not. I'm really looking forward to tasting this.
It sounds like it'll be quite an exclusive thing to start out with.
Ruby chocolate.
Just think, new food, there is a new kind of chocolate on our taste horizon.
It's coming, yes. So now we have the bitter chocolates and the milk chocolates, which are all the same, you know, brown cacao bean. And then, of course, the white chocolates, which are really the butter of it.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're having ruby chocolate. I'm really looking forward to it. And you believe when I find it, I will be chirping about it on the radio.
Right. Good for you.
Yes. Ruby chocolate.
Ruby chocolate. This is KHOI. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. If you want to find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen, go to khoifm.org. That is the webpage that has not only our fine show, but lots of other good stuff about this fine radio station. This is community radio. We'll listen to a little bit of music from Alice McGarry and Rick Exner and other folks. This is called 5 Miles Out of Town. Thank you. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. This is the time of year to preserve the bounty. Everything is just coming out of the garden all at once, and farmers markets are full of things, and you just know way down the road sometime we're going to get the first frost. And you think, well, I should do something with all of this. I have found a fine recipe I would like to share. And thank you, Don, for giving me this book. This is a book called The River Cottage Handbook Number 2. Talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, it's English, so it'll have some unfamiliar terms and some harder-to-get products. But basically, it's preserves by Pam Corbin, who is an excellent jam and jelly maker. And it just has in it all kinds of how-to wisdom and great combinations. She's got the contents read seasonality, the rules, jams and jellies, pickles, chutneys and relishes, cordials, fruit liqueurs and vinegars, bottled fruits, sauces, ketchup, and oil-based preserves, and useful things. So Lana has pulled a recipe out of here that she likes.
Right.
And we're going to taste it.
Because I just happened to, this was a great year for alliums on our farm. Leeks, garlic, onions, we just had bunches of them. And when you have bunches of them,
you got to do something with them.
You end up not just onions do keep, yes, that's good, and garlic keeps, but there's always some that have got like a ding on them, or you step on one, or it's cracked, or it's just a real funny-looking onion, and you don't know.
And you can't keep those because the mold will
get
into them.
You can't keep them, and people take them to farmer's market, and people kind of turn up their nose at the funny-looking ones. So I have a whole pile of onions, and I found a recipe for onion marmalade. Now, onion marmalade, marmalade is customarily made from citrus fruit, and I think of marmalade as a citrus fruit thing, so by the time I get this done, I'm just calling mine onion jam. For me, jam is a preserve that's chunky as opposed to jelly that is clear. So I ended up with this whole wonderful pot of onion jam, and although I found out marmalade is a French term, marmalade doesn't really necessarily mean citrus fruit. It just means fruit that has cooked for a very long time to a thick puree, but I still think of it as citrusy. So
and
I'm going to call
this
it.
This is a vegetable.
Yeah, it's a vegetable. Onion jam. And yes, this book, River Cottage Handbook Number 2 by Pam Corbin, thank goodness it's got a conversion chart from metric measures to the imperial measures, which is what we use. Oh, we use imperial measures, which is good because when you run across this recipe in the book reads 100 milliliters of olive oil, 2 kilograms of onions, 200 grams of demerara sugar, and 150 grams of red currant jelly, cider vinegar, balsamic vinegar, salt, and black pepper. So you get here to Iowa, and besides making all of the changes on the measurement charts, I decided to up things up a little bit because this recipe is a size to make in one big skillet. You just cook it down, and you can can it after that. But I've got lots more onions than that.
And so, not only that, you have that fabulous jam and jelly pot.
So I got out my Maslin pan, which is a big, thick bottom, big, high-sided thing. And I made a few batches.
How much does that hold? Like a few quarts?
Oh, yeah.
It's big.
I make, you can make like 4 quarts in it if you want.
That's what I thought. Almost
which is a lot. But you don't want things boiling over. And what's nice, it doesn't burn. But to make this onion marmalade, and Donna asked me what kind of onions, and my response was, whatever looked like it needed to be used by the time you cut them up. And I even put some leeks in it. Same family.
Mm-hmm.
The trick to this is you sauté the onions.
So you did use olive oil.
Yes. Use olive oil. Sauté the onions, not in my Maslin pan, but I also have a big flat frying pan. And I love the term here. You heat the oil in a large pan over medium heat, add the onions, reduce heat, and cook over low heat, 30, 40 minutes, or until the onions are collapsed and beginning to lose color.
Yeah, you don't want to fry them.
Nope.
You want a gentle, so they melt and just get, because you don't want any crispy bits in them.
Nope. Because that will change the taste. Mm-hmm. They would change the taste. The idea of collapsed onions, so that's a very good term. And then, actually, I did this in a few batches. I kind of took this recipe and kind of multiplied it by four just because I had more than I needed, okay? And so I made batches and kind of set it aside in a separate bowl. So I had this whole bunch of onions. And, yes, I did cry a little bit, but it's more than worth it. And then it says onions, it says sugar. And then it called for red currant jelly. And I am darned if I'm going to dump red currant jelly, perfectly good currant jelly, which I find very hard to come by.
Yes.
So maybe in England they have currants up the kazoo.
Well, or maybe
here.
They run out and buy a jar of it or something. Well, but our currant jelly is very precious.
Very precious. So what do I have? Lots of crab apple. So there you go.
Close
in color, mm-hmm. And you don't want something that's good. You just want a nice edge of sweet in there. So I put in a jar. Well, by the time I multiplied everything up here, it's an 8-ounce jar of jelly. And then all of that goes into the muslin pan and cook, bring to a boil, and let it cook down a little bit. You've already cooked the onions enough to drive off quite a bit of the water, and it's cooking in the muslin pan.
That's not literally water. That's the onion juices.
Right? Yes. Okay. Yeah. And then it becomes gooier and gooier, and then you don't want to put the vinegar in right away. Wait until the end, so the vinegar doesn't kind of like evaporate. She suggests adding the vinegar at the end,
and not much, I must say.
No.
From tasting this,
you
don't start to think vinegar immediately.
No, I didn't. I have made this before, and I overdid the vinegar, which ended up with it's not an.
It gets a little chutney flavor.
Yeah,
then.
It could be chutney-ish, but this is just plain onions. It's so nice to just taste the onions, and I used kind of 1 cup total. Half cider vinegar, half balsamic. Just a little bit.
A red balsamic.
Yep, a red mm-hmm. balsamic. So mm-hmm. it was good. Now, I really like this onion jam, and I will use up more of my onions. I think.
Now, does it have salt in it?
Yes, it does have salt and pepper to
and pepper.
Taste.
Yes.
To taste.
I would always
there you
put
have it. And Diana's just chowing down over here.
I've just eaten about a third of the jar already. It's on some little crackers. It is fabulous.
It's really good with a roast, with a meat thing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be really good with that or just on a cracker. It's a little sweet, but it is pretty intensely
onion. I could see it with scrambled eggs for breakfast. Scrambled eggs and cheddar cheese.
Oh, we have got a new thing.
Mm.
And some of this onion mm-hmm, chutney mm-hmm. or onion jam,
yeah,
right?
Put this on your toast.
Yeah, yeah.
And have scrambled eggs and cheddar cheese.
You don't always have to have a sweet, although this is a sweetish sort of onion, but it's a nice savory thing to have. So onion
Sunday brunch.
Jam.
There you go.
If you look up onion jam on the internet, you get all kinds of suggestions like this.
Oh, the possibilities. You could put herbs in it, too.
Yes, yes.
But you want to keep the herbs a little understated because the onion itself is a very subtle flavor.
Right.
So, like, you might put a few leaves of thyme in people will go rosemary, and that's okay, but I would say go really easy on the rosemary. Mm-hmm. It's a dominator.
Mm-hmm. There you
could go. Do, what else were you saying? Basil is great with apples and onions.
Onions. When I'm fooling around in the kitchen, so my husband Joe says, let me try. So he starts a batch. But he pulled a jar of, he didn't pull a jar of rhubarb jam. He went out and got some rhubarb stalks and put some rhubarb with the onion, and that ended up very pink, which is nice.
Uh-huh.
But that ended up more chutney-like because the rhubarb kind of asserted itself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it would kind of walk right over the onion flavors.
So onion jam. Yeah, I'm going to try this again, and if I actually get my measurements so I can trust them, I will put this up on the website as onion jam.
It's so good.
It is just really good. And you'll be surprised how much a big pile of onions can cook down to not a whole lot. But now, it is worth it.
You can't sell it at the market because it has vegetable?
I can't sell it because I don't have a approved kitchen. Iowa law.
Sorry, folks. You guys are going to have to make your own on this one.
It's a vegetable thing. It's a vegetable thing. But you can cook down your own onions. You don't have to can it either. I mean, you can just put it in the refrigerator and eat it. Cook down your onions.
You could freeze it even if you want it for Thanksgiving, for example.
Yes, you could.
Or with the Christmas goose.
Oh, now that would be good.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's a preserve from Pam Corbin from the River Cottage Handbook, number 2 series of books. Upcoming. This coming Saturday.
Weekend, right.
This coming weekend, Saturday. 1 o'clock, downtown Main Street in Ames is Oktoberfest. Huh? Very good. I know it's September.
It's not October yet.
I don't know. They have Oktoberfest. Any good idea for a party is good with
any
me.
Any time to drink beer,
what
I guess.
What is lovely is that there are 10 craft breweries that will be having sampling from 2 to 5. Very good. And there will be German beers for sale ranging from light to dark. 7 different German beers for sale. There will be music. There will be Germany things. And
I suppose some polka.
Well, I certainly hope so. Mm-hmm. I mean, how can you have so much beer and not a little bit of
polka? So this starts in the middle of the day?
Well, the sampling. It opens at 1 o'clock.
Okay.
And sampling from 2 to 5, and then it probably goes until the beer runs out. But we'll see how that goes. Oktoberfest, best of luck to everybody down there, and enjoy. Ah, that's a taste of fall, too. Yes, it is. And there's upcoming things. Practical Farmers of Iowa actually has a few field days left. Thursday, September 14th, there's a tour of the Darla and Michael Eaton, Good Eaton's Produce Farm in Everly. High tunnels, outdoor vegetable rotations, strawberry beds. And there's one coming up on grass-fed beef. There's one coming up on dried flour production. It is not done yet. Practical Farmers, you can go to a field day, meet a farmer. Go to www.practicalfarmers.org for more information. Yeah, it's a fine bunch of folks.
Yeah, and those field days are all open to the public.
Yes. You think you don't... Everyone has a stake in what our food system does, and what's nice is you meet the nicest people. You get to see Iowa when it's beautiful, and lots of
And there's
of stuff
usually
going
some
on.
Kind of lunch served, which is often something made from the farm.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Thursday, September 14th. A light lunch will follow the field day. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. What a good thing to do. So contact Practical Farmers of Iowa. You've been listening to the Donna Lana Kitchen. And you've heard music by Alice McGarry and Rick Exner. We'll go out with a tune, another one of theirs.
Yeah, these are our own local musicians.
Well, this is, and their band, although the band doesn't exist as an entity anymore, this is the band whose iteration was called Slowpoke. Yes, it was. So here you go. Go to KHOIFM.org to find out more about this fine radio station. We talked about apples today.
Yeah, and likely to do so for a few more weeks, months, maybe even.
Always can do something with a good apple dessert. Apples, what a treat. Thanks to the trees, thanks to the bees, and thanks to the folks that tend the orchard for bringing us another year of bountiful goodness. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We had fine engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.
And for the apple? No, onion. Onion jam.
Onion.
Whatever you're calling it, was delicious.
It's good.
I just sat here and had my whole lunch. Thank you, Lana. Ha ha!